Welcome to Clifton Health On Air.
I'm your host, Danielle.
And I'm your co-host, Lauren.
And we are a local health department podcast here in Clifton, New Jersey that also services the township of Little Falls.
We are located 12 miles west of New York City.
And today we're talking all about the holidays and the most important part about the holidays.
Food safety.
And today with us we have Enrico Caruso, REHS at the Clifton Health Department.
Yep. Welcome. Welcome, Enrico.
Hello. How are you?
We're good. How about you?
Welcome. All right. Getting ready for the holidays.
Yeah, getting ready.
Oh, yeah. Got food all ready to go, ready to cook. Got it home.
Wow, you're better than us.
Yeah. More prepared than us.
Way more prepared than me. But let's talk about the most important thing.
Food safety.
Definitely. It's a real important thing about where you're getting your food, how you're handling your food, how you're cooking your food. And then especially what you're doing with your leftovers and where you're getting it from, et cetera, and how it's being handled and cooked.
Awesome.
You know, there's a laundry list of things that a lot of people don't look at. They just, I got to cook, I got to get it done and get dinner on the table. But they don't realize there's a lot of important things to look at.
Right, exactly. So with the holidays approaching, the holiday season is a time when many people give back, including volunteering to prepare holiday meals or donating food to those who are less fortunate. This is also a time when people are handling and receiving food in unfamiliar settings. Improper food handling has led to past foodborne illness outbreaks during the holiday season. Those handling food in a different kitchen or preparing food in a new way must be even more aware of basic food safety practices to prevent illness outbreaks.
What are the four basic, simple food safety tips?
So when we start with the food safety, I mean, let's start from the beginning. Where are we getting our food?
Yeah.
How we're getting our food? How
Absolutely.
We're getting it home? Where we're keeping it? You go to the store, you're going to check the labels, make sure everything's completely frozen, nothing's defrosted when we're buying it. Cans are not broken or especially dinged at the ends, because once air gets into those cans, botulism can grow. And especially if they're expired, a lot of them, believe it or not, say best by date on it. When the can has a best by date, that means that the food in that can by the manufacturer is saying it will be the best quality till that date. Technically, it's not bad. A lot of people see that date, think it's expiration, and they throw it by.
Yeah.
They throw it out.
That's me.
You know what? A lot of people do it. You know, you see the date, you just think, okay, this is expiration. No, that's just the manufacturer saying, hey, by this date, it's good. Especially like on milk, canned items, chips, stuff like that. That's a use-by date or a best-by date. That's just for quality reasons.
Okay.
If it actually says expired, don't use it.
Don't use it.
But if the can or the bag or whatever is compromised or the wrapping is broken or if it has, say, your turkey, it looks like it has a lot of ice crystals on it, that could mean at one point it defrosted and it was refrozen.
Oh.
So you always want to make sure that that is completely frozen. You don't see a lot of ice crystals or discoloration. Sometimes you can't see the meat in there, but some products are in a clear bag. When you look at that bag and you see the meat looks off-colored, don't get it, because at one point it could have been mishandled, defrosted, refrozen, who knows. And you know, if you buy something frozen, keep it frozen. You buy something refrigerated, keep it refrigerated. Don't defrost leaving it out. Don't leave it on the counter. You always want to defrost on the refrigeration that good stuff.
All right. And what about those who shop at farmers markets or different places where you can get food?
So, yeah, I mean, anywhere you get food, it's all the same. You just want to make sure that if you get vegetables, I mean, they're not protected. So multiple people are digging through them to find the best quality whatever they think that looks the best. So you want to make sure you bring your vegetables home, wash them, keep them clean. If you're buying something that's like meat or raw that has to be kept cold, keep it cold below 41 degrees. Good idea is to bring a cooler or a bag, an ice bag with ice in it to keep it cold, especially if you're going far away from wherever the farmer's market is to your home. You want to keep it cold. And if you're buying anything hot, you want to keep it hot, always above 135 at all times. This way that the possibility of any foodborne illnesses and bacteria and viruses can't grow.
Right. And also to keep all of our reusable bags clean,
right?
That's a very good point, too. Yeah, keeping even your cooler, your personal coolers and stuff. A lot of people just keep throwing stuff in there and don't realize that they should be washed, rinsed, sanitized.
Oh.
You know, this way, you know, any food that might not be in a bag or wrapped in plastic, it's touching that container. So whatever was in that container before could have left any residue that could contaminate that food. So, you know, you always want to wash your containers or use new bags, reusable bags, just so that there's no cross-contamination between one product to the next.
That's interesting, because you would think you go to the store, you put it in the plastic bag sometimes that they have there, mm-hmm. and you just put it right on the reusable bag. But the reusable bag also has chicken next to it or
exactly.
a meat product next
exactly.
to it. And it's like, is that protective plastic layer protecting our broccoli or something?
I mean, that the plastic bag technically is,
okay.
but it's a good practice to keep it all separated. Yeah. If you have turkey, you have beef, you have chicken, keep it all separate. Even beef and chicken I would keep separated because chicken and turkey have to be cooked to 165, beef only 155.
Okay.
And then that beef is not getting high enough to kill any of the bacteria that's coming off of the other food. So you always want to be careful of that, and especially raw vegetables. They only got to get cooked to 135. Sometimes it, you know, it's a quick blanch. It doesn't even get to sit in the water to a point where it gets hot enough to kill anything. So you just want to try to eliminate any of that extra bacteria or contamination that can happen. So those thin little pieces of plastic bag, even though they're annoying and it's half the time you can't get them open, you should really use them to keep everything separate.
Absolutely. Thank you for that tip.
No problem.
So after the grocery store and we get home and we put everything away, put our cans in the pantry, we put our meat in the fridge, are there any tips for storing?
Well, yeah. So when you get everything home, you want to make sure, you know, you put in your chicken, your beef, well, in this case, your turkey, everything goes in the fridge. You want to always keep it below 41 degrees. You know, you got 4 hours when you bought it to when you get it home, just to get it cold again. So you don't want it sitting out too long. So the best thing is also once you get it in your fridge is make sure your turkey, your beef, anything raw in that aspect is always on the bottom of your fridge. All your fresh vegetables on top. Just to reiterate, it, you know, chicken and turkey, 165. Beef, 155. So you just want to put the thing that needs the most cooking on the bottom because that more temperature is going to kill any bacteria. So if that turkey leaks on your vegetables by any chance while it's defrosting, those vegetables are never going to get to 165 no matter how long you cook them. So at that point, you're just making more of a chance for salmonella or any other bacteria or viruses to grow because they're not hitting that temperature it needs to. So it's a good practice to follow anything raw on the bottom, anything ready to eat on top.
And what about the temperature for fish?
Fish is usually only got to be cooked to 145.
Okay.
Fish, sometimes the bigger concern would be allergies, shellfish, stuff like that. So, like, if you're doing clams and oysters, lobsters, people have all kinds of different allergies. So you want to keep that, you know, above the turkey and the chicken, but you also want to maybe keep it in a separate container, plastic container, so that it doesn't leak or cause cross-contamination with allergies and stuff like that.
I just had a question related to, let's say a lot of people are getting frozen turkeys and frozen items. Do we have to also store that in the freezer a certain way, or is the freezer totally different to the refrigerator?
Very good question. A lot of times people forget, they think, oh, it's frozen, doesn't matter.
Yeah.
Well, God forbid, say one day you lose electric and your food starts to defrost in your freezer. Now that turkey's dripping on all your other food. So you definitely want to follow the proper storage, just like I mentioned with the refrigerator, in your freezer. But these days, everybody pretty much gets a frozen turkey, and they try to get it early so they'll keep it in their freezer. It's always a good idea to keep it on the bottom. Don't put it on top of your fridge because you don't want that leaking. You don't want that touching anything. Even in your freezer, if it gets a little slit in it and then the freezer goes down, you don't want that dripping all over your food, your other food, especially if it's not in plastic or in a Ziploc bag or something that could protect it.
Okay.
And then also then it leaks, your freezer's contaminated. Now you got to empty your freezer, defrost it. We don't need extra work, especially on the holidays.
Right.
Absolutely.
So let's talk a little bit about food poisoning as well. On foodsafety.gov's website, they have a fact that says, did you know that about 1 in 6 Americans will get sick from food poisoning this year. Not only does food poisoning send 128,000 Americans to the hospital each year, it can also have long-term health consequences. You could protect your family from food poisoning at home with the following 4 simple steps, which we talked about earlier. Mm-hmm. Let's talk about it a little bit more. The 4 steps are clean, separate, cook, and chill.
Perfect points. And again, it, like we've mentioned most of the time, keeping everything separated. Turkey below, beef on top, then your fish, and then your vegetables. Even when you're starting to prepare things, make sure we're using cutting board, which most of us only have one cutting board at home. You want to make sure you wash, rinse, sanitize before you start another project. So as a chef back in the day, I would try to get all my vegetables done, wash my cutting board, bring it back out, do all my meats, bring it, wash, rinse, sanitize, bring it back out, do my turkey. Because turkey, remember, needs the highest temperature, 165, to kill all that bacteria. And the last thing you want to do is introduce the turkey bacteria to your vegetables or your beef, just because they're not hitting that high temperature to kill any of the bacteria that might be in the turkey. Clean is self-explanatory. You just want to work in a clean environment. You know, if you're at home, you have pets, make sure that the pets are kept out of the kitchen. If you have food sitting around, make sure you get it wrapped up, covered, put in a fridge, especially if it's raw meats. Even vegetables. Once we cut vegetables, they should really be put in the fridge, especially melons and onions and garlic. Once you start cutting that, you know, now you've taken any of the bacteria on the outside and if you have introduced it to the inside, you just want to make sure you're taking every precaution. So as you cut something, if you're not going to cook it in immediately, put it in the fridge so it stays cold. And if you're working with vegetables, say you have 2 cutting boards, you're working with vegetables here, and then you have your turkey sitting there, try to use separate tables. You don't want that chance of anything splashing or anything like that. Cleaning, I mean, make sure you use clean utensils, cutting boards. You have a sink rarely available to wash, rinse, sanitize. We don't have 3 compartments. It's usually 1 compartment. But, yeah, washing your hands with hot soapy water is the best practice. You know, wash for 20 seconds or sing happy birthday twice. And then make sure you wipe your hands. Paper towel. You don't want to use regular cloth towels. Cloth towels hold bacteria. So you want to use paper towel because, believe it or not, that paper towel is where you're actually wiping away all those germs you just killed. Because if you don't, and then when you wash your hands, the water is what washes away the bacteria. So, like, don't use hand sanitizer because a lot of people think that if I use hand sanitizer, I don't have to wash my hands. Totally false. You're supposed to use that after you wash your hands. Because sanitizer, you're killing the bacteria, but that's not being washed away or wiped away. Wash your hands before you start doing anything.
So let's talk about the next step. Separate.
So, well, we touched base on that pretty much, you know, with the cutting boards, how to put stuff in the fridge. We talked about keeping things clean and keeping everything cold. And if you have anything hot, make sure, you know, if you're cooling it down within 6 hours from when it's hot, once it hits 70, you got 6 hours to get it to below 41 degrees. At home, the best practice is, you know, let it cool down a little bit. Once it's cool enough, get it right into the fridge so that it gets below the 41 degrees. So it doesn't stay in that temperature danger zone that could create a perfect breeding ground for bacteria and viruses.
And then the third step, which we talked about before, is to cook.
Correct. So, yeah. So once you got everything cut up, you know, it's a good idea to get all your stuff diced up and cut and marinated and all that good stuff. You know, most of the time your turkey, you've taken it out, you've put it in the fridge to defrost. Usually needs a good week, depending on how the size of the turkey. But you always want it defrost within your refrigerator. You know, you don't want it ever to get it to a warm temperature because bacteria grows at those dangerous levels.
There is a danger zone. What is that?
Yes, so there is a danger zone that's 40 to 140. That's where bacteria grows the most. And then there also is the super danger zone, which I think it's like 70 to 100 or something like that, where bacteria can grow exponentially. Wow. So it's a very good idea. Once you have your food, you either keep it cold below 41 or hot above 135 at all times.
And now let's get into, everyone's favorite part of the holidays. Well, I don't know. It's not my favorite part, but cooking the turkey and preparing it correctly.
Okay. So, yeah, I mean, most people, you know, people brine their turkeys or they season their turkeys. Very good idea, like we said, is get your turkey home, usually a week before. You want to take it out in your refrigerator on the lowest shelf possible and let it defrost really well. That's going to help with the quality of the turkey and making sure it cooks to the right temperature and that the center of the turkey is, you know, not frozen, because sometimes if it's fully frozen, it will take more time to cook. And, you know, these days, I don't know, everybody should, but a lot of people don't have thermometers, thin probe thermometer. So you can go all the way into the meat and make sure you're getting to the bone, because believe it or not, the outside of the turkey could be one temperature, but by the bone, if it's frozen, will be a lower temperature. So it's not hitting the temperature that you need. So, you know, in that case also, I could touch on when you're using your thermometer, make sure you check the leg, the breast, and the wings. They all cook at different temperatures. They're dark meat and white meat, but the breast being the biggest piece of meat, mm-hmm. you usually want to try to find the fattest part and try to get all the way to the bone. Not into the like going through the bones, like the rib cage or something. You want to get into the center of the meat so that you're getting a proper temperature that, you know, you're reaching at 165. Right. And also another good practice is once you see all the juices coming out of the chicken, as long as they're coming out clear, it's a very good indication that you're getting close or you're already at temperature. But it's always good to use a thermometer. I know a lot of the turkeys now come with that little pop-up timer. Mm-hmm. Those are good, you know, as an indicator for you to start checking your turkey. I personally rip that out. I don't trust it. I like to go by my own knowledge and my temperature and stuff like that. A lot of people do use it. Mm-hmm. Even though that thing pops, you should use a thermometer and make sure you're hitting that 165 to make sure that your turkey's fully cooked.
Absolutely. I have a side question, mm-hmm. Enrico. Not to get too off topic, but the thermometer, mm-hmm. when you're measuring the temperature of the turkey, should you clean it in between each location that you want to check the temperature for?
No, if you're going location to location, that doesn't matter. If you're checking it and letting it sit out, I would definitely wipe it. You know, just water, a little water and the soap, just so that it's not sitting there and letting the juices sit on it. And, you know, mm-hmm. it's contaminated. It's been in the turkey. And let's face it, we're going crazy. We're checking a bunch of things. We might forget that was in a turkey and now stick it in the a ham. Piece of beef or ham or what have you. Right. So you definitely want to wipe it in between. But if you're only using it and you're sticking it in the breast and the wing all at the same time, doesn't matter. But you should, if it's going to come out and sit out on your counter, definitely wipe it off and with soap and water and let it air dry. Air drying is the best. Just like I said about your hands with the towels. You don't want to cross-contaminate. Towels hold bacteria, hold water, you know, and they hold a very good chance of holding that turkey juice or whatever you wiped up and technically contaminate whatever else it's touching.
Right. Thank you.
No problem.
So how long does it take to thaw a turkey?
For my aspects, I usually try a week because, like I said before, you want that bird fully defrosted, because if the center's still frozen or the leg's still frozen, you're not going to get, like, perfect temperatures, because now the outside might be 165, but when you get closer to the bone, if it's frozen, that's only going to be, I don't know, 32 degrees because now it's still frozen.
Right.
So you want that bird fully defrosted. So I say about a week before. You could even do, if you're brining your turkey, some people might do 2 weeks ahead. So that the 1 week it defrosts and then the next couple of days you're brining it, where you put it in water with salt, sugar, and spices. A lot of people think it makes it juicier, which some do, some don't. It just introduces more flavor to the turkey. But when you're brining it or you're defrosting it, always in the refrigerator below 41 degrees. You don't want that sitting outside at all. Or, you know, people might be like, oh, I don't have room in my fridge, I'm just going to put it in my garage, it's cold enough. No, it's not. 41 and below.
So when we unwrap the turkey from the grocery store and from our refrigerator or freezer, should we be washing the turkey?
You can rinse your turkey off. A lot of our homes, the sinks are small. don't wash it in the sense that if you wash it and it splatters everywhere, or if you don't have a deep enough sink, then I would try to stay away from washing it. But most people would rinse it because the juices that are in that packaging or whatever, you just want to start with a clean. But so even if you're washing it, say you have a deep enough sink, after you wash your turkey and take it out,
wash your sink.
I would wash, rinse, and sanitize with some kind of sanitizing spray or something before we do anything else, because now your sink is contaminated.
I'm just thinking, what for people who do, they wash the turkey, they sanitize their area, now the turkey's on the countertop, right? Would that be at a different temperature now? Is that a problem?
No, because you still have time, like you still have like 4 hours.
Oh, okay.
Because even though you took it out, hopefully you washed with cold water. Don't wash with hot water.
Okay, wash with cold water.
Our hot water in our sinks don't get to 200 degrees or anything like that, so it won't cook anything. But you definitely want to use cold water when you're rinsing it. Now you clean and sanitize. It's a good idea to keep your turkey on a separate cutting board or in a pan, because it's still going to drip all kinds of juices and stuff like that. Just so that nothing else gets contaminated. But anything that comes into contact with that turkey, splash, or anything, should be washed, rinsed, and sanitized.
I just thought, now that the turkey is washed and thawed out completely, would it be bad to season it right then and there? It's a two-part question. We could season it, we can stuff it. Is that recommended?
So when you once you washed it, it's a good idea to pat it down dry with a paper towel. You don't want any excess water or juice anywhere. Or if you're going to brine it, then you can season it, brine it, put it back in the fridge. If you're going to cook it right away, yes, you could sprinkle all your seasonings, put your stuffing in there, and cook it. But when you're stuffing your turkey, remember that stuffing needs to get to 165. So you got to take a temperature of the stuffing as well as the bird to make sure everything is hitting 165, because now that stuffing's in the turkey, it's technically being surrounded and it's not getting the direct heat it should. Even though the stuffing's most likely been cooked already, it's still that stuffing, because a lot of people think, oh, I'm just reheating the stuff. No, because it's in a raw bird. So you should always make sure your stuffing, your bird, everything hits 165. And that goes with anything you're stuffing. If you're stuffing fish or whatever, make sure that the stuffing and the actual protein are hitting the temperatures. Beef 155, fish 145, all that good stuff. You know, I know it's a traditional thing to put the stuffing in there, but in my aspect, there's just that's an extra step of work. And now a lot of people don't like it because it's been sitting in the turkey. It could be mushy, it won't get crunchy. Like, a lot of people like their stuffing a little on the crunchy side. So you're not getting that because now it's kind of like steaming inside the turkey.
Got it.
So for my eyes, I would say save a step, cook the stuffing separate, put the more aromatics like herbs and like I said, onions and stuff in your bird, because nobody really going to eat that, but it'll give more flavor to the inside of the turkey. And then at that point, those veggies, doesn't matter what temperature they are because you're throwing them out.
You're not eating those.
The lemon and the garlic, you're not going to eat that. That's just to flavor the inside of the turkey. So at that point, it doesn't matter that stuff. But if you're putting stuffing that people are going to eat, like your sausage stuffing or your vegetable stuffing, whatever it is, if it can be eaten, it has to hit 165 just like your bird does. And then, you know, once it's seasoned, it's stuffed, it's tied up, you put it in your pan, you put it in the oven, you know, then it's up to the time. You know, in that case, you could look at the label. The label might have temperatures on it. You know, just remember that on the label, it's usually the manufacturer telling you to save themselves to cook the bird to. I know there's a list of temperatures for different poundage of birds.
Right. We're just going to, I was just going to talk about that. Basically, not everyone's getting a large bird. Some people are getting 8 to 12 pound birds. And according to foodsafety.gov, they recommend if you have an 8 to 12 pound bird, cook it at 1.5 hours to 2 hours. If you have a 12 to 16 pound bird, 2 hours to 2.5 hours. A 16 to 20 pound bird, 2.5 hours to 3 hours. And 20 to 24 pound turkey, 3.5 hours.
Yeah, I mean, you could go by that. I wouldn't use time as what my... Say, it's 3 hours, turkey's done. No, you still got to check the temperature.
Right, and so then, in this case, the temperature is more prominent.
Exactly.
Basically get to that 165.
And let's face it, not everybody has the same oven, kitchen, or appliances.
Right.
All of
right.
that could be different. You know, it could be 350 at my house, but it'd be 400 at someone else's house because the oven's temperature gauges could be off. So even though they tell you 2 hours, I would still check the temperature just because if the oven is set to 350, that's not always the true temperature of the oven because you don't know all the different aspects. Mm-hmm. Somebody opening and closing the door constantly. Is somebody putting other things in there?
Okay.
You know, if you overload your oven with extra trays with your turkey, it's not 350 all the time because now you've stopped the circulation of heat. So you've got to be careful with that. So even though it's a good idea in 2 hours to check your turkey with a thermometer, make sure you hit the 165, but I wouldn't solely rely that 2 hours my turkey's fully cooked.
Okay. And then when checking your turkey, if the turkey is in an oven bag, because a lot of people use that oven bag during the holidays, do you still stab it with a thermometer if it's in an oven bag?
So, yeah, I mean, unfortunately, the oven bag, even though a lot of people do use it, it's difficult because once you compromise it, it's not doing its job anymore. As a chef, I've never used those bags. I feel like we get enough plastic in our lives. Why are we going to overheat something and put plastic on it, cook it in the bag? And personally, I like crispy skin. Those bags don't usually give crispy skin, so I wouldn't use it personally. So
that's the chef in you.
Exactly. But yes, you would want to stab through the bag. You want to get into the breast, into the wings. If you are going to use a bag, maybe the time is helpful because, you know, if it's an hour and a half, you have your 12-pound bird, you got the hour and a half, 2 hours, then you could maybe remove the bag or cut it open and then take temperatures. So at this point, you're not going through the bag. You're not compromising what the bag's doing. And like I said, you're not introducing that extra plastic because now you're stabbing the bag going into the turkey and you got a melted bag on your bird, which, like I said, I don't like, but, you know, some people do use it, you know?
Right.
Right.
And there's even people who cook their turkeys in microwaves. If you're doing it in a microwave, same thing. It's got to hit that 165. So no matter how you're cooking your bird, air fryer, oven, microwave, toaster oven, whatever it may be,
smoker,
165.
Fried.
Smoker.
A deep fryer.
Deep fryer. Right? Deep fryer, you know, on contrary belief, you know, you would think it would take longer. It actually takes less time in a deep fryer.
Right, yeah.
So, you know, that's why I said, even though it says 2 hours, that's in an oven. Mm. I wouldn't say you need 2 hours if you're deep frying a bird because it's at a higher temperature. So that's why it's a good idea. Pull it out, take your temperature. And, you know, if you're deep frying your turkey, it's totally off subject. Just be careful because you can overflow. If your bird's really wet and it's got a lot of juice, that water will explode as you introduce it into the oil. Now, this has nothing to do with food safety. This is more your safety. But just be careful not overflowing it, not putting a wet bird in there because oil and water do not mix. They explode. And then you get your fires and people get hurt. And there goes your bird and
there
you
goes
got
your
upset
holiday.
Family.
Right.
Right. And there goes the holiday. But, yeah, no, honestly, food safety is safety, human safety. So
exactly.
We're also talking about that here, too. Some final steps. Oh, this is an interesting question. Is it safe to cook a turkey overnight?
I would
at
not.
Low temperature.
At low temperatures. So, I mean, I know a lot of people do it because of smoking. They use it at a lower temperature and stuff. I wouldn't say doing it overnight is a good idea because it's never going to hit that high temperature. You know, you could do it with beef and different cuts of beef, I should say, because with beef, unless it's chopped meat, the bacteria's on the outside. So once you have it at that low temperature, you're killing anything on the outside, so you're okay. With a bird, chicken, turkey, pigeon, anything like that, I would definitely not do low temperatures just because you're just giving it more reason to grow bacteria. So if you're going to cook it, maybe cook it at 300 instead of 350, but I wouldn't put it in a smoker at 100 degrees overnight because you're just giving it too many reasons to grow bacteria.
Okay.
Maybe if you're doing a turkey breast, but I wouldn't give it overnight. I would do maybe an hour or two at a low temperature, but I wouldn't say overnight, like 6 or 7 hours, in either in a smoker or in an oven. Definitely, I would not recommend that.
Okay. All right, and then how do you know the turkey is ready?
We touched a little bit on that. It's your thermometer. Stick the probe in there. You know, this goes with if you're doing the whole turkey, or if you're just doing turkey breast, or you're just doing turkey legs or wings, whatever it is, you always want to cook to 165. Or if you open up the meat, or you cut it a little bit, or you squeeze it, you'll see clear juices. Once you see clear juices, or you should be already at that final stage of your bird being ready to be eaten at the proper temperature. Don't rely on just the juices. Always take a temperature. Or cut to the bone, because like I said, sometimes the bones will be a little red in there and you'll see some blood. That means it's still not cooked.
Okay.
Because it might, like I said, it cooks from the outside in. So the outside might be 165, but at the bone, maybe 155, 140, who knows? So it's always a good idea just to check the juices and then a temperature on all the fattest parts of the meat, the thigh, the breast, even the wing, doesn't matter, you know?
Okay. That was really informative.
All right. Do you want to talk about, like, all our sides and stuff like that? Like, baked potatoes are very dangerous?
Yes. Let's talk about it.
If you're getting your baked potatoes, sweet potatoes, and you're going to bake them whole, you know, you just always want to, once you bake them, they got to stay hot, 135 and above.
Hmm.
Believe it or not, bacteria can grow exponentially on a potato. A lot of people think they're not dangerous, but they're very dangerous. So wash your potatoes when you get them. Rinse all the dirt off. Some people use veggie, like, cleaners and stuff. Just rinse it underwater,
And then you peel it.
If you're going to do mashed potatoes and stuff, you might want to peel it. But if you're, I'm talking solely like whole baked potatoes, like if you're doing a...
A loaded potato,
a whole potato. Mm-hmm. Just remember that potato, once it's cooked, it's got to stay 135 and above. You know, a lot of the times, you know, we're trying to get a lot done. We only have one oven. So we cook, we take it out, and we leave it on the table until everything else is done. So, it's almost impossible because we don't have enough room to keep everything. So, you know, we got to try to keep everything as hot as possible. So most likely you're going to put your bird in first and then start doing your sides. Even as your sides are done, you take them off the stove or you keep them on the stove or whatever you do, keep them hot, 135 and above, until you're ready to serve everything in one shot. Don't take your sides out and put them on a table while you're waiting for the turkey to cook, and it's still got another 15, 20 minutes, because by the time that potato on the table and the turkey comes out, that potato is going to be below the temperature that you want.
So how would you keep the temperature?
I mean, at home, that's the biggest problem, is you don't have a lot of space.
Right.
So usually what I do is in a microwave, if I'm not using it, cover it with a plastic saran wrap, with aluminum foil, or try to keep it on the stove as much as you can, because our stoves, you know, you're using them, they just heat, so you try to keep it as hot as possible there. I know people have gone to extents where they'll set up, sterno racks and keep them on hot water, or even buy those electric hot plates. It's a good alternative too. Or they also have hot bags, like bags that are insulated. You know, you could put one of those over your food so it holds it hot until your turkey's done. And that brings up another good point, is like, try to time everything. Don't just cook this to get it at, you know what I mean? So once your turkey's in, try to time everything so you're not cooking things too early, you're not cooking things too late, but everything is kind of close to the same so that you could start eating all at the same time.
Right. And that kind of segues us into traveling, right? A lot of people are traveling now, and sometimes they do have far drives to family members' house, or people are coming over at a later time.
Yeah.
So how would someone travel?
So a lot of us, we cook at home, you know, to help out, and we'll bring it to our in-laws' house or our family's house or a friend's house. Again, using those hot bags, trying to keep it wrapped up, something made insulated that holds heat. As long as you're not traveling state to state and you're going like within 4 hours, you're okay. Once you get to the house, it's a good idea to get it reheated right away. You want to reheat above 165 and hold at 135. Or best practices is if you cook it and cool it down properly the day before so that it can be reheated at your travel, because now you can hold it cold and then travel, which is a little safer than trying to keep it hot, just because of the hold it cold would be easier than holding it hot.
Hot, okay.
So I would suggest if you're traveling, if it's something like a casserole or something that can be cooked the day before, I would cook it before. Even our turkey, cook it the day before, cool it down correctly, so take it out of the oven.
Yeah, what would that
be? So once you take it out of the oven, once that product hits 70 degrees, you want to get it either in a fridge, in a shallow pan, or on ice so that it cools down below 41 degrees. So best practice is you take it out of the oven once it hits 70, put it on a flat pan or something that's open enough, and hopefully you have enough room in your fridge. Put it in the fridge. Now remember, it's cooked, so you want it on top of our fridge, not below. So you don't want nothing to fall on it, and you want some kind of cover on it.
Okay.
So now you got it in your fridge. Leave it there until you're ready to leave, so that hopefully it gets below 41 degrees. Put it in a dish, put it in a cooler with ice, and then when you get to your family's house, your in-law's house, whoever it may be, you take it out of there, and then you can put it right in the oven, reheat it to 135 and above, and then you can serve it. So sometimes it's easier to cool it down and then reheat it, but if you have to bring it hot, it's a good idea to heat it to above 165, and then, you know, you could use a cooler with no ice. They're insulated.
Okay.
Hot bags like our pizza men have. They have, you know, covers and stuff
something
you can
like
put
that
on their food. You just want to make sure you're not, like I said, driving hours and hours. As long as it's within 4 hours and you get to the house and then reheat it right away, you
should be fine. Right. Thank you for that. And I just like to segue into family members coming over and entering your kitchen.
Yes. So
what are some things to look for when helping?
So just like we stated at the beginning of our conversation, if they're going to come and help you and get in your way, tell them, wash your hands.
Right.
You know, wash your hands. You know, if they're coming in and they're all dialed up and they got cologne and they got their nails done and all, you don't want them starting to touch your food. You don't know where the heck they've been, what they have on. Not saying that people are dirty or anything, but you don't know where they've been or what they touched or what they handled. Did they do it properly? Are their clothes clean? Did they shower? Did they...
Hygiene.
Aprons, I mean, we really don't use them at home. Some people do, but they're just like clothes. If they, or your towel. They absorb anything. So if you're spilling juice, you're spilling your turkey. You washed your turkey. It splattered all over you. You had your apron. Now you're using that apron to grab things or whatever. You're cross-contaminating. So you, just like anybody entering your kitchen, they wash their hands. You know, tell them, you know, if you're going to do anything, do it away from anything that could cross-contaminate, like your turkey or what have you. Me personally, I kick everybody out of my kitchen. I don't want nobody in my kitchen.
Right.
I know what I got to do, and I don't want to have to sit there and teach you or tell you what to do. So, you know, I understand everybody wants to help and do stuff. If they are going to help, you know, wash their hands, use clean equipment, proper hygiene. Their hair's not falling all over the place. Anything that can't cross-contaminate or introduce some kind of contamination, it's best that they go set the table up while you
go decorate.
Or your spouse or whoever may be home helping you, you're the only ones touching everything. And that's mainly with all the turkey and their sides, the potatoes, the vegetables, you know, just, you know, then when you get to the real important stuff, the desserts and stuff, those are a little less concerning because they're hitting high temperatures. There's not much in them that is potentially hazardous. And, you know, yes, they have raw eggs, but cookies are like 450, 500 degrees, and they get high temperatures. So, like, with desserts, the biggest thing I would suggest, allergens. Just be careful. People are allergic to nuts, chocolate, sugar, our gluten-free friends. And then, you know, stuff like that. So you don't want that stuff to cross-contaminate. So even though it's cross-contamination with bacteria and food poisoning, but it's also with allergens. Allergens are a big thing. So even though people are getting sick and have food poisoning, let's say 40% of the time it could be also the allergens. Because they don't know they have nuts or they're not sure. And people are just grabbing and touching. And it's like, okay, now what do we do? Because now we got someone passed out on the floor because right. they ate a nut or something.
And
like
then
that.
Right, right. With certain like gluten-free or dairy-free options, it's always interesting to also ask them, do you have a nut allergy? Because almond flour is used.
Exactly.
Or,
right, yes. Exactly.
Almond milk paste, is used. Almond milk, oatmeal, yeah, all that
like
stuff.
That.
Any of that. Egg allergy. I mean, yeah. I hate to say it these days. When I was a chef, that was like one of the things I cringed about because you never knew what public person has or mm-hmm. was allergic to. Or, you know, I think most of the time it was just they didn't like it and they just used that they were allergic to it. But you had to, you know, do what they asked. So I would have to change a lot of my recipes just mm-hmm. because of that or not offer it to them. So, you know, that was our first question. Every time somebody sat at our table when I had my restaurant, do you have an allergy? And I do that at home now. Even though I know most of the people that come to my house, right. but if it's someone new, like Lauren or Danielle, I'd be yeah. like, do you guys have any allergies? And I know they have a laundry list of stuff, but, you know, that's besides the fact. You know, and you try to be as friendly as possible, but you also try not to cross-contaminate because if you're chopping nuts for a cookie on a cutting board, you don't wash, rinse, and sanitize that board, and now you go cut lettuce for a salad, doesn't get cooked.
Right.
So now that allergen or that cross-contamination has happened, you eat that salad, you're allergic to nuts, you're going to get sick. Mm. Or you're going to have an episode, or right. I'm not sure how they call it, but you're going to have one of those where you're going to need your EpiPen.
Yeah.
Or
like
yes,
anaphylactic
yeah,
shock or
yeah.
an allergy problem.
Correct.
So that's, yeah, that's very interesting, and that's really good that you ask your guests what their allergens are.
Right. All those different ingredients.
Mm-hmm. You never know what somebody
right.
puts in there. That's so, true. You know, and it's, like I said, mostly with desserts. But it also could be with your salads and your fruits because,
right.
you know, sometimes you make your Brussels sprouts with nuts or whatever. But the biggest thing is to remember not only the ingredients, it's also if I'm cutting those ingredients on this table or with this knife or with this cutting board, we're washing, rinsing, sanitizing before we start doing anything else because you're still introducing that nut allergy because there's oils on there to something else.
Wow.
Yeah, so you can get them sick that way. So, you know, it's very easy to, if you're allergic, some people are so allergic that even
that
the dust
the
or
smell.
Smelling
mm-hmm.
can affect it. So it's just a good practice. Keep it separate
right.
from everything else. And if you know right. most of your family and you know maybe one person's allergic or, is, you know, even one person's allergic to one thing, don't use
right.
that.
Right. That's what I was going to say because I have a lot of family members who are allergic to shellfish.
Uh-huh.
So we just don't use it.
Exactly.
And that does eliminate a lot of, like, the clams and the things.
But at least then you can enjoy
then,
your
yeah.
family time and eat and
exactly.
drink and all that stuff.
Right.
And you can have clams another day by yourself.
Yeah. I'll make you cook it. This was an amazing conversation about food safety, but I don't want to just talk about Thanksgiving. There's a lot of fun stuff happening during the holidays,
mm-hmm.
With New Year's and everything, especially with fall time and winter time. So we have apple picking, tailgates,
mm-hmm.
and Friendsgivings, just friends coming together. And just having a bunch of potlucks.
Mm-hmm.
So how would you provide some food safety tips regarding those specific areas
so,
people
I mean,
are going to attend?
Those are just like if you were cooking at home. I mean, you got to keep everything cold, keep everything hot. You know, if you're driving it there and eating it there, just make sure you keep it hot, keep it cold. Or you have a way to reheat things, a grill or... you know, you got portable deep fryers now, grills, you got portable mm-hmm. everything. Just have to have that source of heat or refrigeration, even a cooler with ice to keep either hot or cold. It depends on what it is. If you're transporting raw items, I would put them in a separate container, you know, going back to that separation,
mm-hmm.
You know, and then have my thermometer and make sure we're grilling everything, cooking everything to temperature. And keeping it all separated, allergens, food poisoning.
Basically,
so pretty much
changes.
Everything we spoke, nothing
yeah.
changes. It's all the same thing. Just outdoors, it's a little more chance of something falling on it or outside contamination
okay.
getting to it. You know, something blows in the air or who knows, was the grill clean before you're using it? Was the, you know, the utensils falling?
Right.
Do you have extra utensils? Because now let's think about it. We don't have no way to wash things. So we got to have extra equipment, utensils. So something like that, disposable utensils and plates, I think would be the best way to go. Cups, so that this way they can be tossed out and a new one can be picked up, especially if it falls on the floor or someone's allergic. You know, they dipped it in the fish and now they're dipping it in the pasta. And now, there's, you know, make sure you have a spoon for every dish so we're avoiding the allergen cross-contamination and the likelihood of any kind of, you know, virus or bacteria going on that spoon and then being introduced into another food. So.
Right, and that goes for everything during throughout the holidays.
Correct,
for sure.
Correct. And any holiday.
And any holiday.
It doesn't matter what holiday is. Any ethnic background.
Any holiday with food.
Just watch, exactly, which, you know, food is the number one thing at all holidays.
Yeah.
So, you know, how it's cooked, how it's handled, always the biggest things. And, you know, who's cooking, where it's cooking, you know, that's, and it's all an aspect on everything.
Okay. If you had to give a full recap of this entire episode, what would you say?
You know, just, it's always a good thing to have family over. It's always a good thing to cook and enjoy. Just, you know, be weary. I know it gets frustrating. It gets frantic. You go crazy shopping and, you know, you got Christmas around the corner and all that good stuff and you got to do it all over again. Just be mindful of what you're handling, how you're handling it, when you're cooking it, how you're storing it, how you're defrosting it. I mean, all this information could be found pretty much anywhere on Google, on our websites, Facebook, everywhere. It's the number one thing that a lot of people do oversee. Totally separate topic, if you're using aluminum pans, pots, trays, all that stuff, try not to leave your food in there for a very long time, especially hot. This, again, this is not to say that it will happen, but there's always a chance of aluminum leaching into your food, especially acidic foods, tomato sauce and stuff like that. If they ever notice, a lot of people put aluminum on their eggplant rollatini. Don't realize that if you let it sit there overnight and the aluminum's touching the tomato sauce, you'll find holes in your aluminum because the acid actually eats through it. So try not to store. You could cook. But if you're going to store, try to store in glass, stainless steel, wood. But when you're ready to cook, you could cook in the aluminum. Just don't store it in that stuff.
Would, sorry, I'm just about if you put, like, a parchment paper down.
Yeah. You could definitely, you could put parchment. You can, and then store is a better idea than just putting it. It's just because a very acidic food will eat and the aluminum will leach. And again, this is like if it's sitting overnight or sitting at high temperatures. You just don't want to leave things in there for a long time.
Okay.
Or, you know, leave them out overnight to cool. Don't think your garage is cold enough to hold food. I've seen my mother do it. She'll cook so much food and I have nowhere to put it. And she just lines my garage with food. And it's like, you can't technically do that. But
yeah, we're just trying. You're just trying to spread food safety.
Exactly.
That is the main goal for public health, and that is why we asked you here on this episode.
No, so
thank you so much for
You're welcome.
The insight, and I do hope you have a wonderful holiday.
Thank you, Enrico.
No problem.
And good luck cooking. We want to thank you all for listening out there. If any residents have any questions regarding any of the topics we talked about, we are going to put some resources that we found on foodsafety.gov. We will put a link to our website, and we'll also put USDA and CDC's food safety resources.
Perfect.
All right. Well, thank you so much for listening, and have a wonderful holiday season. Have a wonderful day.
Thank you.
Clifton Health on Air.
Lauren, take us out.
Tune in to our podcast every other Monday for a new episode. If you have any questions, you can email us at help@cliftonnj.org. You can visit our website at www.cliftonnj.org. You can follow us on Facebook and follow us on Instagram. Our handle is Clifton Health. And before we leave today, let us ask ourselves, did you make a difference in someone's life today?